So a reading from the Jiva Dharma, chapter 15. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Rajanath. So Maya has nothing whatever to do with creating the Sharupa of the Jivas. This has to be accepted. At the same time, I have also clearly understood that the Jiva is by nature subject to the influence of Maya. Now I want to know, did the Chit-Shakti create the Jivas and give them their Tattvastha Swabhav, marginal nature? Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Daksur Unmavatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Napitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Tadati Sapadantikam Vancha Kalpa Tadubhyascha Kripa Shindhu Bhaye Vacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from upstate New York, Stuyvesant Falls, Stuyvesant Falls, where I stay. Fortunate to have a very saintly visitor for the next week and a half, the Tathagata Swami. Some of you may know him. Very, very wonderful saintly soul who does just a lot of chanting and is just a very humble person. And tomorrow, have my second bhakti immersion, always very exciting to share Krishna consciousness with others. I mean, the bhakti immersion was started because so many people were being introduced to Krishna consciousness and we needed a next step, give them a chance to experience it more fully. And it's worked. Many, many of those people have come forward, so many. And the whole tenor of the retreat has changed from just basically yoga people, you know, getting exposed to bhakti to yoga people who become bhaktis and others. It's a wonderful experience. Jiva Dharma, congratulations. We start at the beginning. We're up to chapter 15. This way, over the years, we go through so many books. And this is a hard one to do every week because it's so in-depth philosophy. I mean, it is one of the main philosophical texts in the tradition. And as we remember the story of people coming to Krishna consciousness after the generation after Lord Chaitanya, now we're following a logician who became Krishna conscious. And, took initiation, became Rajanath, and he's living outside the ashram where the Babaji is living in Gojramdweep, but he's visiting. And he's inquisitive. That's one, Siddharma Pritcha is one of the 10, to inquire about Dharma, religious principles, is one of the 10 main important principles of devotional service, the things we should do. And he's inquiring. And his particular inquiries not only bring him to Krishna consciousness from the standpoint of a logician, but his inquiry with the basis of learning fully the tattva of Krishna consciousness. The most important thing in our study is to learn some Bandhagyan, to understand what is reality and what is the evidence for what we say. What is evidence that proves that? So we can use that as to say, yes, this is the truth, and this is why it's the truth. And so he's really inquired about all the subjects of Krishna consciousness, and specifically, he wants to understand or study this Dashamula, which is 10 root philosophical statements on Krishna consciousness that cover the whole gamut of Krishna consciousness, specifically Sambandhagyan. The first 8 Dashamulas are Sambandhagyan, basically core metaphysical knowledge about what is reality. And that's called Siddha Pradesh. It's instructions that lead to perfection, because if you know what is reality, it will imply the means to understand it and will imply the result of doing so. So it's so important to understand Sambandhagyan. And Prabhupada, 80% of the Shastras, 80% of Prabhupada's teachings are Sambandhagyan. What is the Krishna and Krishna's energies? What are the tattvas? What are the subjects of reality? So somehow or other, he started with the Shakti Tattva, and we studied it. And I mean, all I can say is, get the book and go over it again. I'm trying to give some insight, but it's really difficult to explain it and then retain so much information and so much deep information. So I do hope you're getting something out of it as I am studying it. So we're in the 15th chapter, Pramaya and Pramana. Pramaya is the object of your study, is the object of knowledge, and Pramana is the means by which you can know it's true. So this is called Pramaya. And there's different objects of knowledge, subjects. One was Shakti Tattva, now one is Jiva Tattva. And just a little recap, Vrajanath was going to visit Srivasangam, where great saints were and where the residents of Godrumdweep, the Babaji's at Godrumdweep, were visiting, who are his direct lineage. He asked the important question: tell me who I really am according to tattva, and why have I come to this world? What is my purpose and why am I here? And this should be deeply inquired about, deeply learned, and deeply thought about. We should be looking through this question in the world. Why am I here? And how does and what am I doing now? And how does that measure up to why am I here? And who am I? And how am I acting according to that reality? So he asked that question, and the Babaji said, the day the Jiva asked this question, it's the auspicious day good fortune arises. And I think my first spiritual realization, I can remember first, but really the key one, I remember just sitting in a car maybe one Friday night with my good friend Jan, who's now part of the congregation at the Bhakti Center, very important person handling all the immigration work. And just, you know, looking at him and say, there has to be something more. In other words, you know, than this. Have I come to the world just to sit in a car Friday night and think of frivolous activities? Whether I'm successful or not in those, frivolous activities, is that why I've come to the world? Have I come to the world just to raise a family or just to become a politician or to become, why have I come to this world? What's my purpose? What's my meaning? And that's so essential. So, in reference to that, Babaji Maharaj quotes the fifth shloka of the Dashamula, which describes Jiva Tattva. And I'll just read that because it's going to be the core basis of what we study. Just as many tiny sparks burst from a blazing fire, so the innumerable jivas are like atomic spiritual particles in the ray of the spiritual sun, Sri Hari. Though these jivas are non-different from Sri Hari, they are also eternally different from him. The eternal difference between the jivas and Ishvara is that Ishvara is the Lord and Master of the Maya Shakti, where the jiva can fall under the control of Maya even in his liberated stage due to his constitutional nature. So this is the basis of the answer to the question, who am I? I'm a jiva. Why have I come? Well, because your marginal impotency and you've been invested with choice. According to your choice, you're influenced by one energy or another, whether it's the chit shakti, the spiritual energy, or the maya shakti. So you're marginal. And so then he wanted Rajanatsi, he wanted Vedic evidence, and there were so many verses quoted from the Brihat Aranyaka Upanishads about the nature of the jiva. And then Vrajanath wanted to know, what does this mean, this term, tatastashasti? And then we had the describe its marginal nature. And then he asked the question, is there any material component in the jiva's original constitution? And he said, no. The jiva can be influenced by Maya, but it's solely created from the chit shakti. We are spiritual, but we are minutely spiritual, we're spiritual, but our constitution is very infinitesimal. And although we have this same potency, the spark, the fire cannot be covered. But the spark can easily be extinguished, or the spark can easily be inflamed. But even though it can be extinguished, the nature of the spark is fire. And even though it can be inflamed, the nature of the spark is fire. So our nature is chit, and nature is spiritual, even though that nature can practically be extinguished. So the question, is there a material component? No. It's not material. The spark is fire. We are chit shakti. We're created from that. And then Vrajanath presented so many things he heard on the nature of the jiva, that it's Brahman covered by Maya becomes the jiva, or that the jiva is nothing but a reflection of Brahman. and so many different conceptions, which were rejected as Mayavadi, because the jiva is not only not illusory, but its constitutional individuality are eternal. So Mayavadi, in one way or another, will present our individuality as illusory, and liberation means to free yourself of any concept of individuality. It's Mayavad's a very minority view, but somehow it took hold, especially in America and India too. So now we've come to today's question. Did the Chitshakti create the jiva and give them their tattvastha svabhav, marginal nature? So again, this is about the origin of the jiva. So we'll listen to the Babaji's answer, and we'll try to explain it as far as we can. No, the Chitshakti is Purna Shakti, the complete potency, and all its manifestations are eternally perfect substances. The jiva is not Nitya Siddha, although when he performs sadhana, he can become sadhana siddhi and enjoy transcendental happiness, like the Nitya Siddhas, eternally perfect beings. So, you know, anyway, we're gonna see some things that, you know, apparently different than some things that Prabhupada said, but the real conclusion is Prabhupada said both things, really. You just have to try to understand in context what Prabhupada said, and never deny anything he said. Sometimes you just have to say, Bill, he said this and he said this. But anyway, let's explore what the Jiva Dharma says. And, the jiva is not Nitya Siddha. And somehow or other, it's manifest with this choice. And it has an opportunity to become perfect. But it's not eternally perfect. It somehow is manifest as tattvastha. It's just like the shore before the ocean came in or not came in. It's not eternally covered by the ocean or eternally. It starts with a choice. All the four types of Srimati, Radhikas, Sakis are Nitya Siddha, and they are distinct expansions, Kaya Vyuha, of the Chitshakti Srimati Radhika itself. He says, so he's explaining there are Nitya Siddhas, but they come from a different place. Their Kaya Vyuha means they're almost duplicate expansions of Radhika herself. Her qualities are expanding. All the jivas, on the other hand, have manifested from Sri Krishna's jiva shakti. Let's not draw any conclusions until we read the whole chapter what this means. The chit shakti is Sri Krishna's complete shakti, whereas the jiva shakti is his incomplete shakti, just as the complete tattvas are all transformations of the complete potency. Similarly, innumerable atomic conscious jivas are transformations of the incomplete shakti. One second. Okay, bear with me. They have something called critical editions, where you get different editions. They like to do that in scholarship, you get different editions, and because these are all translations, and it helps you actually understand the original. But sometimes it's English editing or something. And this was initially translated from the Sanskrit to the Hindi, and then from the Hindi to the English. So, the Chit Shakti is Sri Krishna's complete Shakti, where the Jiva Shakti is his incomplete Shakti. I'd like to see the word for, well, I guess, Purna. Just as the complete tattvas are all transformations of the complete potency, similarly innumerable atomic conscious jivas are transformation. I'm just going to have to leave that, meditate on that, and even have some suspicions that, you know, the translation without the Sanskrit words sometimes makes philosophy difficult to understand. Okay, Sri Krishna, being established in each of his Shaktis, manifests his Sarup according to the nature of the Shakti. When he is situated in the Chit Sarup, he manifests his Sarup as Sri Krishna and also Narayan, the Lord of Parabrahma. Okay, that makes sense. When he's situated in his spiritual potency, he manifests his nature as Krishna. When he is situated in the Jiva Shakti, he manifests his Sarup as his Vilasmriti of Vraja Baladev. That I don't understand. I'm sorry. And being established in the Maya Shakti, he manifests the three forms, Karnadakshay Vishnu, Shiradakshay Vishnu, and Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Okay, that I understand, because Vishnu is a manifestation of God for the material world. And of course, Baladev, I guess, is the source of, well, Baladev serves God in all affairs of existence and knowledge. In his Krishna form in Braja, he manifests all the spiritual affairs to superlative degree. In his Baladev Sarupa Shesha Tattva, he manifests Nitya Mukata Parishad Jivas, eternally liberated souls, who render eight types of service to Krishna, the origin of Sesha Tattvas, Nitya, the eternally liberated associates, okay. Again, as Sesha Rup, Sankarshan, and Parvyoma, he manifests eight types of servants, to render eight types of services as eternally liberated associates. Associates of Shesha Rup Narayan. Now I'm reading this. I'm struggling with it. I'm trying to figure out the people who are listening it. Just bear with me. Let's get through this, and then it becomes more understandable. Mahavishnu is an avatar of Sankarsana, situates himself in the Jiva Shakti, and it doesn't mean he's a Jiva. There's a potency of God. And in his Paramatma Sarup, he manifests the Jivas who have the potential to be involved in the material world. At least he's from Sankarsana. This is all manifest from Baladev. From Baladev comes the Chaturvyuha, the four expansions in Dwarka. And then again, that expands into, that's Mulas, Baladev, Adiruddha, Sankarsana, and Vasudev. And then from and Sankarsana, Balaram is called Mula Sankarsana, and expands into the Vaikunthas in the second Chaturvyuha, four manifestations, and that's again Aniruddha Pradyumna, Vasudev, and Mahasankarsan. So it says here from that Mahasankarsan comes Mahavishnu, and he situates that Mahavishnu, I guess that's how it comes from Baladev, that Mahavishnu situates himself in the Jiva Shakti, in his Paramatma form, any manifest jivas who have potential to be involved in the material world. So here it's saying the jiva come from Mahavishnu. These jivas are susceptible to the influence of Maya, and unless they attain the shelter of the Ladini Shakti, of the Chit Shakti by Bhagavan's mercy, the possibility of their being defeated by Maya remains. So somehow they can be influenced by the Jiva Shakti, and unless they come in contact with the Ladini Shakti that's manifest in the heart of the devotee, they're forever to be defeated in the material world. The countless conditioned jivas who have been conquered by Maya are subordinate to the three modes of nature. Bearing all this in mind, the conclusion is that only the jiva shakti and not the chit shakti that manifest the jivas of the living entity. So living entities come from the jiva shakti, which comes from Mahavishnu. Okay, Vrajana, you said earlier that the chit world is eternal and so are the jivas. If this is true, how can an eternal entity possibly be created, manifested, produced? It is created at some point of time. It must have been non-existent before that. So how can you accept that it is eternal? See, so this must be a contradiction. You just described some kind of creation explanation. And when you describe this creation explanation, it seems to have taken place at a particular time. Now, the answer he gives is very, very interesting. The time and space that you experience in this material world are completely different than the time and space in the spiritual world. Material time is divided into three aspects, past, present, and future. However, in the spiritual world, there is only one undivided, eternally present time. Every event of the spiritual world is eternally present. So, time, and this is such an important point to understand when you try to understand these subjects. Time is not absolute. We experience time as absolute. We experience time as absolute. We can't imagine that even in the Gita, Krishna says, time I am, the destroyer of the world, and I've come to engage all people. So that means that God is above time. And that God has access to all three aspects of time, past, present, and future. And that the God and his internal creation is beyond time. And therefore, there are events that happen which are eternally manifest. And we don't have access to that because we have no experience of anything that manifests beyond time. Even though, if we believe there's a God, God must be beyond time. There must be something beyond time. So it's reasonable to accept this, but completely beyond our experience. So he explains further, whatever we say or describe in the material world is under the jurisdiction of material time and space. So when we say the jivas were created, the spiritual world was manifested, or there is no influence of Maya in creating the form of the jivas, material time is bound to influence our language and our statements. My friend Satya Hari in my class, my Nectar Devotion class, when we're talking about surrender, and he's kind of a scholar in the Sikh tradition, he made just a very interesting point that, words are pregnated with the history of the tradition they're born. So the words that we have in relationship to anything is going to be influenced by time. So when you describe eternal events in the language that's born in material time, it's going to reflect material time. So when you describe that the jivas manifest from the Mahavishnu, then it seems like a historical time when it's just an eternal event that manifests. So it's reasonable to understand these things. What we always have to understand is that when we accept God, even before we accept God, when we talk about matters of transcendence, our language and our intellect and our mind to a certain degree fails. And I give the example that I just thought of myself. When you look at the creation of this world, you have two mutually exclusive options. It's always been existing, that it started at a particular time. Now, if it started at a particular time, if reality started at a particular time, if God started at a particular time, we have no experience of something that manifests from nothing. We can't conceive of something coming out of nothing. There was nothing existing, and now something is here. This is the creation myth of material scientists. I've been reading some books on evolution I bought, trying to understand the idea. But there's one point that they cannot fathom, that their creation myth of material science is more difficult to understand than the creation conception, or they would say myth, that there's God. That there was nothing and then there was something. We have no experience of that. Nor do we have any experience, or what can we fathom, that something is always existing without end. That something goes back ad infinitum. That it has no beginning. So we have no experience in this world of things that have no beginning, and we have no experience of this world, of something that has beginning, there's nothing before. So when we try to wrap our brains around what is God and what is the origins of things, it's any option is going to be inconceivable to us. And really, the only conclusion is that the origin is inconceivable. It has inconceivable focus. So he's saying, the conception of past, present, and future always enters them in some way. No, this is the inevitable in our conditioned states. We cannot remove the influence of material time from our descriptions of the atomic, jiva, and spiritual objects. The conception of past, present, and future always enters them in some way or another. Still, those who can discriminate properly can understand the application of the eternal presence when they comprehend the purport of the description of the spiritual world. We contemplate there's an eternal presence. Anything that's happening on the realm that is beyond time is always happening, and that's beyond our experience. That's beyond our logic. That's beyond the world of cause and effect. Baba, be very careful in this matter. Give up the inevitable baseness or the aspect of description that is fit to be rejected and have spiritual realization. And again, the example, a young girl who's not mature has no access or understanding of what is sex desire. There has to come a certain level of maturity. And it's the same thing in terms of our realization, to understand the spiritual reality has come to a certain level of realization. All Vaishnavas say that the jiva is an eternal servant of Krishna, that his eternal nature is to serve Krishna, and that he is now bound by Maya because he has forgotten that eternal nature. So from the platform of words, that is true. From our language, the language we can use. However, everyone knows that the jiva is an eternal entity, of which there are two types, nitya-mukta and nitya-buddha. The subject has been explained in this way only because the conditioned human intellect, controlled by pramada, inattentiveness, is unable to comprehend the subject matter. Realize sadhakas, although, experience transcendental truth through their chit-samadhi. Our words always have some material limitations, so whatever we say will have some mayika defects. My logic and argument cannot help us in this regard, so it is futile to use them to try to understand inconceivable subject matter. It's reasonable to say that something is inconceivable, but it's not reasonable to try to understand it within the frame of reference of our experience in the world of cause and effect. I know that you will not be able to understand these subjects in a moment, but as you cultivate their transcendental moods within your heart, you will realize these transcendental moods within your heart, you will realize Chinmayi Bhav more and more. In other words, all the transcendental moods will manifest themselves in the core of your purified heart. Your body is material, and all the activities of your body are also material. But the essence of your being is not material. You are an atomic conscious entity. The more you know yourself, the more you will be able to realize how your sarup is a tattva superior to the world of maya. Even if I tell you, you will not realize it, or simply by hearing you will not attain it. Cultivate the practice of chanting Harinam as much as possible. As you go on chanting Harinam, these transcendental bhavas will begin to manifest in your heart. And the degree that you do so, you'll be able to realize the transcendental world. So this is, and he's saying it right at the beginning. We're going to hear so many things which we don't have the capacity to fully understand because they take some particular realization and experience. And that is reasonable. There's certain things that you have no access to understanding without some previous experience. Mind and speech both have their origin in matter, and they cannot touch the transcendental truth even with the greatest endeavor. The Vedas say in the Taittiriya Upanishads 2.9, Yato vacho navartante apapya manasasaha. The speech and the mind return from Brahman, being unable to attain him. I advise you not to inquire about this matter from anyone, but to realize it yourself. I've just given you an indication on a boss. So interesting that, you know, there's books written on this. There was controversies written on this. There's wars fought on this. And basically, Bhaktivinoda Thakur basically says, don't do it. It's a matter of realization. Don't do it. You can understand something. You won't understand it fully. Vrajanath, you've explained that the jiva is like a spark of a burning fire or an atomic particle in the rays of the spiritual sun. What is the role of the jiva shakti in this? So the jiva shakti and the jiva are different. Jiva Shakti is the overall marginal potency, and the jiva is the entity that's manifest from that potency. So now he wants to ask, explain like the jiva is like a spark of the burning fire. So what is the role of the Jiva Shakti in this? Babaji will read one more explanation. Krishna, who is in these examples, is compared to the blazing fire as sun, is a self-manifest tattva. Within the compass of that blazing fire as sun, in other words, Krishna, everything is a spiritual manifestation, and the rays spread far and wide beyond its sphere. These rays are the fractional function, anukarya, of the Surup Shakti, and the rays within that fractional function are paramanu, atomic particles of the spiritual sun. The jivas are compared to this very localized atomic tattva. So from within the perspective of Krishna, everything is spiritual. But there are energies or particles, just like the fire, just like the sun rays, that are very tiny. The jivas are compared to this very localized atomic tattvas. Surup Shakti manifests the world within the sphere of the spiritual sun, and the function outside of the sphere of the spiritual sun is carried out by the jiva shakti. So the internal potency covers a certain realm, and when that Surup Shakti, like the sun rays, start to manifest, then another energy, the jiva shakti, takes over. Therefore, the activities related to the jiva are those of the jiva shakti. Rashi shaktai vividaya shruyate, Svetashvatara Upanishads, that achintya shakti is called para shakti. Although it is one, this innate potency, swabhakti shakti, has manifold varieties based on gyan, spiritual knowledge, bala, spiritual strength, and kriya, spiritual activities. According to this aphorism of the Shruti, the chit shakti is a manifestation of the parashakti and emanates from its own sphere, the spiritual realm, as the jiva shakti. And in the marginal region between, and as the jiva shakti, and in the spiritual region between the spiritual and material worlds, manifests eternal, innumerable eternal jivas who are like atomic particles of the ray of the spiritual sun. So are there any questions? That's quite a bit to digest. Or anybody like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, Govardhan Bhaktas.
Hey, Govardhan, I know you appreciate this philosophical discourse. You learn a lot. You know, it's so nice you're hearing regularly, and therefore you're able to, you know, give class and teach others. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Bol Maharaj, it's Malati.
Malati, Hare Krishna. So I saw you got that letter, you know. Read very, very carefully and make sure, you know, you volunteer for something where you know you have time for it and that you can do practically. It looked like it was quite a large job, but when you discuss, you'll see, okay?
Okay, thank you so much, Maharaj.
Yeah, I mean, you know, try to help because you want service and discuss it. Just think about it, you know, and don't feel pressured, but just think very practically, ask questions, what it entails, you know, and then either, you know, say then, I think I can do this, or say, let me think about it, I'll get back to you in a few days and let you know what I can, you know, but it's a great opportunity to do service if you have any time. Okay.
It really is. Thank you. I'm going to try to see what I can do. Thank you.
Okay, great. That's wonderful. It's so nice when you have abilities and you get empowered. Great. Wonderful. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, we can end for today. Bunch of culpa to you soon.